This is White Sox Weekly, your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago. Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Welcome in to White Sox Weekly. I am Connor McKnight. Big guy voice said it, so it must be true. Start your game day with a pregame patio party. 2 hours of an all-you-can-eat and drink buffet starting at just $63 per person. It is the best value in the ballpark for food, fun, and excitement. For more information, visit whitesox.com/party areas. That's whitesox.com/party areas, or call 312-674-1000. White Sox and Cincinnati Reds play game two of a three-game series this afternoon. It is an absolutely gorgeous morning here at the ballpark. Clear blue skies, maybe a cloud or two. What's looking like it could hit something close to 70 degrees today. White Sox players are taking some infield practice on the field right now. Got some Reds percolating into the dugout and heading out to the bullpen too. This is picture perfect. White Sox lost a ball game last night, 11-1 the final. The Reds struck for five in the third inning against White Sox starter Chris Flexen, and then just kind of kept adding on throughout the night. Flexen, Jared Schuster, Davey Garcia, Justin Anderson in his White Sox debut, and Tim Hill all worked for the Sox. For the Reds, I mean, the story of the ballgame for them was, sure, the offense, but Andrew Abbott, the lefty, pitched well. Seven innings, one run, no walks, three strikeouts. He is one of those kind of throwback lefties, pitch to contact, mixed velocity, good spot of the fastball, all that kind of stuff. And he, unfortunately, flummoxed the White Sox last night. We've got a whole bunch of news from the White Sox yesterday. White Sox general manager Chris Getz spoke to reporters, and you will hear the vast majority of his conversation with the Intrepids starting at about 11 o'clock, I believe. We do expect to have a guest from the White Sox clubhouse. Looking forward to that as well, sorting through everybody's pregame routines and kind of identifying exactly who's going to work for us on the show today, and we'll appreciate them when they get there. Jack McGrath is our producer in our downtown Chicago studios. You'll hear his voice from time to time. We got a lineup for the ballgame today against the Reds and a starting pitching matchup as well. Pretty excited for this one, too. We'll get into that, I think, to start. But as always, this show is your show. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. You want to talk a little White Sox? We're here for you. It's Nick Lodolo going for the Reds. It'll be his first start of the season coming off the injured list. The Reds have gone to essentially a six-man rotation for a little bit here, getting Lodolo back into the mix. They were also rained out on Wednesday, and so had to, a lot of options with their starting rotation. They stayed in rotation, skipped a guy in order to get Andrew Abbott the start last night, and it worked out well for them. But wanting to work Lodolo, who's one of the top guys, or one of the guys they think can be a top guy in their rotation, a high draft pick, Nick Lodolo will start for the first time in 2024. Meanwhile, for the White Sox, now at 2-11, a rough start to the season for sure. For the White Sox, Garrett Crochet, who has been the bright, shining light in the White Sox organization here over the first 2.5, almost 3 weeks of the season now, makes his fourth start of the season. Crochet is 1-1. He's got a shiny 2.0 ERA and 21 strikeouts across three starts and only one walk. He has been absolutely fantastic, and I am very excited to see what he's bringing to the Reds lineup today. Speaking of lineups, here's how things will look for the White Sox as they fight the Reds this afternoon. Robbie Grossman now in a familiar top spot in the lineup. Grossman's been there for the better part of the week after Andrew Benintendi was dropped toward the middle. His struggles have continued some offensively. Benintendi was 0-for-3 yesterday. Grossman had the lone RBI for the White Sox last night, part of a 1-for-4 night. He doubled on the left field line and has taken some really good at-bats. DJ's talked about it quite a bit in the first few games of Grossman's White Sox career. Grossman's whole reputation after about 11 years in the big leagues has been some decent power, an okay outfielder, at times really good. He's getting into his 30s now. But for the most part, has been able to really control at-bats. And that seeing pitches, that ability to hit from both sides of the plate, too, has been something that's been really helpful for the White Sox at the top. He's taken some good at-bats so far this year and did continue to do so last night. Let's see, where else should we go up and down the lineup here? Oh, well, we'll go to the second spot. Andrew Vaughn gets bumped up one spot. He's at first base and batting two. Gavin Sheets back in the lineup. We'll talk about Sheets and the heater he's been on over the last few games. Gavin's hitting three and the designated hitter today. Kevin Pillar is in right field batting four. Lenin Sosa has third base. I expect that's where we'll see him pretty regularly here for the next... Well, probably until Lenin Sosa tells you he's done playing third base, up until Yoan Moncada comes back. News on that in just a little bit. Paul DeJong's got shortstop. Zach Remillard is at second base. He's the seventh place hitter. Dominic Fletcher back in the lineup today. He's playing center field. And Martin Maldonado will do the catching for the White Sox today and bat nine. So there's your lineup for the Sox. And a bit of a different look. Against a lefty again, but Pedro Grifol has mixed in two left-handers, Fletcher and Sheets, to face Nick Lodolo. Garrett Crochet is going to see all right-handers in the Reds lineup this afternoon, or at least that's how it'll start. The one exception would be Ellie De La Cruz, who is a switch hitter, of course. You knew that already. De La Cruz has been making highlights since he made his major league debut last season. The production has been interesting for De La Cruz. He certainly got the potential to be one of the top players in the league, but carrying something like a 40% strikeout rate is going to limit the ceiling at some point for De La Cruz. But he hit an absolute mammoth shot last night, a three-run homer off Chris Flexen. He is already the owner of a game this season where he hit one 450 and an inside-the-park home run in the same game, both coming from either side of the plate. So De La Cruz is the only guy in this lineup that isn't just a right-hander, but will bat, obviously, right-handed against Garrett Crochet. About Crochet, I have been really impressed, obviously, with just about everything that he's been able to accomplish so far. I have also been really impressed with what he's been able to do, I guess you'd call it off the field too. So when you talk about what Crochet has brought to the ballgame, I think the first thing, believe it or not, that I think has let him get off to such a great start has been the fastball command. Sure, it's velocity, and sure, it's a great slider, and mound presence, and being 6'10", he's not 6'10", but feeling that way out on the mound, all of that stuff matters. But fastball command has been, to me, the most impressive part of Garrett Crochet's start. It's allowed him to get ahead of hitters, it's allowed him to put hitters away, and it's allowed him to get to that slider and the cutter and changeup that he's been working into his game as well. So Garrett Crochet makes the start for the White Sox this afternoon. I think it'll be a good one. Hopefully able to keep this Reds lineup to a minimal amount of runs, and we'll see what the White Sox are able to do from an offensive side against a guy in Nick Lodolo making his first start of the season. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, White Sox center fielder Dominic Fletcher is going to join us here on White Sox Weekly. So we'll be back in a couple with Dominic. This is White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight. We got the White Sox and Reds coming up this afternoon. A gorgeous day for baseball. And joining us on the line is White Sox center fielder Dominic Fletcher. Dominic, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate the time this morning. How are you?
Thanks for having me, guys. Good.
Absolutely. Dominic, listen, start to the season obviously has been a tough one for the White Sox with the record. But what I've noticed from you, especially at the plate here, it almost seems like you were Two different hitters, because the approach, the contact, the everything over the last couple of your starts has been absolutely fantastic. Just a matter of, you know, getting your feet wet, kind of understanding how things were going to go here in the first part of the season. It just looks like you're much more comfortable now and much more controlling of your plate appearances.
Yeah, you know, I feel like as the season goes on, more at-bats under your belt, you get a little more comfortable, start to make some adjustments on, you know, what they're trying to do to you and my approach and everything like that. So, yeah, you know, just kind of being comfortable in there and being relaxed and just playing my game.
You had it wasn't your first trip to the bigs, right? You got a good taste of things with the Diamondbacks last season, but you did record two early outfield assists with some real good throws. And I've noticed that teams don't run on you so much anymore. Is it nice to kind of get those out of the way and know that that's in the scouting report and you may have a little advantage defensively that way?
Yeah. You know, I'd honestly rather it not be in the scouting report and guys keep running and keep trying to, you know, make outs on the bases. But, no, it's definitely nice. I always try to, you know, charge the ball hard, you know, cut the distance and try to, you know, get the ball out quick.
What has the transformation, or I guess the change from right field to center field been like? Obviously, you've got a guy, a teammate in Luis Robert Jr., who's down for a little bit here. He plays an exceptional center field, so I'm sure you're able to watch him some in spring training. But it's not like center field is a foreign thing to you either.
Yeah, you know, I played center field all growing up, all the way up through college, until I got in the Diamondback system, and we had a couple other really good players that I played with in the minor leagues, Corbin Carroll, Alec Thomas, all of us being center fielders, you know, they had me start moving around. So I still feel comfortable out there and, you know, just try to go make plays for the pitchers.
Are there things, you know, for young ball players who might be listening, like what are the mental keys or the adjustments you might remind yourself if you're going from right field to center? What sorts of things need to be different, whether it's reading the ball or making throws to the bases?
Honestly, I think in center field, you get a much better view. You get to see the pitch coming in, which almost helps you be able to get a little bit better of a jump because you can see the pitch. In right field, it's tough to track the pitch. You can't tell if it's in, out, up, down. So you're kind of just playing it off the bat, but in center field, you know, you definitely get a little head start on the jumps just by pitch location and what pitch it is.
I was looking through the player bio that you've got on Baseball Reference. I don't know if you've read that recently. Probably not, right? I mean, you know where you've been in your life, right? It's not like you're reading your own bios.
Yeah.
But I was curious. Your older brother David obviously has been in the bigs for a while now and established himself as a darn good player. You guys played on the 2023 Team Italy World Baseball Classic team. Whose idea? Who got approached first? Did one of you had to talk the other one in? I'm just thinking, if it were me and my brother blessed with that athletic ability, I'd have to talk him into playing instead of the other way around. Or were you both in on this?
Yeah, I think they came to him with the idea. We hadn't played together since high school. I think when I was a freshman in high school, he was a senior. So that had been the last time we'd played together on the same team. But when they came to him with that idea, I know my dad was really excited about it, about us just, you know, sharing the field and being able to play together. So, you know, we bought in and had a lot of fun over there.
What's the best way to annoy your brother as a teammate?
As a teammate, I'm not sure. Probably like not scoring on one of his hits or something.
But, okay, all right.
I can think of some other ways off the field, probably.
What is the best way to annoy your brother as a brother?
I don't know. We have a great relationship. It's nice to be able to have him to lean on. I don't annoy him anymore. I'm sure I did a ton when I was a kid, but you know he's great and. Having him as a tool anytime I need him there is awesome for me.
You guys are both such – well, maybe I'm putting words in your mouth, but you guys have contact first, it seems, as a big part of your approach to your at-bats. Is that something that, you know, Dad taught? Is that just a happenstance of being brothers the way you are? Is that something that coaches got to you along the way through your high school career and kind of – or is it just coincidence?
I think a little bit of both. You know, probably just being smaller in stature. You know, knowing what you're good at, and having you know, being blessed with good hand-eye coordination, and then just understanding, you know, what our game is. I think, you know, kind of leads to that.
When you look at the assignments today and you see that Lodolo is going to roll out there, we're talking to Dominic Fletcher, White Sox center fielder today here on White Sox Weekly. And you know Lodolo's a lefty. He's making his first start of the day. What sorts of things as a left-handed hitter yourself do you start going through to make sure that you've got the mindset right?
You know, just first off, just controlling the zone. You know, swinging at pitches I can handle, especially, you know, against left-handed pitching. I want to, you know, shrink the zone a little bit. Obviously, you know, being tougher to hit from the left side, shrink the zone and kind of get a pitch I can handle and try to drive something.
Dominic, I'm wondering too, I ask most guys this, you know, when they're early on in their big league careers, looking back at your college career a little bit at Arkansas, I'm curious, what made that the right place for you? You know, how did you get to that point? I'm sure you guys had connections to everything, but for you, it had to be a little bit different from everybody else that you knew that ended up there.
Yeah, you know, obviously being from Southern California, that's kind of a big change of scenery, a big move across the country. But you know, I knew I wanted to go play in the SEC. I wanted to play in front of fans, and then play against, you know, the best competition in college baseball. So you know, I went on a couple visits to a couple of SEC schools. I really loved you know, the coaching staff they had over there: Dave Van Horn, Tony Vitello at the time. And then obviously the facilities there are, you know, unmatched in college baseball. So, you know, kind of all those things together. I know the coaching staff was a big one for me because, you know, you go to college, you spend 8 hours a day with that coaching staff. So if it's a staff that, you know, you don't get along with, you're going to have a tough time over there. So I think, you know, just the quality of the staff was a big thing for me over there.
I would imagine some of the, whether it's routines or drills or whatever that you picked up as a Razorback, are probably some of the things that you have stuck with so far in your big league career, yeah?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, you learn things at every level. The competition gets better every level you go up. But definitely, you know, still using things I learned in college now today.
Dominic, really appreciate the time, my man. Thanks so much for calling in. Looking forward to watching the ABs tonight, and go get one against the Reds this afternoon.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
You got it. Dominic Fletcher, White Sox center fielder here on White Sox Weekly. You know, I'm so glad Dominic was able to call in and call in early on the show. One of the things that I've really been encouraged by, as I mentioned when we brought him on the air, and I've talked about this some on, I think, on last week's White Sox Weekly, was just how much more comfortable and how much more successful, obviously, Dominic's been in his last couple of games, last couple of starts, you know, 5-6 starts, something like that. And it's just, you can see very clearly the kinds of skills and the kinds of damage that he can do that the White Sox front office identified when they brought him in from the Diamondbacks in return for Christian Mena. And it just seems like with the White Sox, you know, kind of lack of right field depth over the last 4, 5, 6, 7 seasons, that a guy like Fletcher is very clearly a dude with a high floor at this league, a guy whose contact ability that he and I just talked about a little bit there is going to keep him in at bats and hopefully for a long time, right? The idea that Fletcher with the little, he's got some decent pop, but I wouldn't be surprised that if at his peak, he's sitting at something like 20, 25 home runs, maybe even out of either center field or right field or something like that. But his calling card is going to be defense, going to be those tough ABs and a lot of contact ability that's going to hopefully drive pitchers insane. And one of the things that we've been hoping the White Sox could get done a little bit more offensively is just get base runners on. You know, we talked some about the difficulty the Sox had about with runners in scoring position here over the first 2.5 weeks of the season. And not only had their rate of success, right, the batting average with runners in scoring position, been the worst in the league, but unfortunately, the number of chances that the White Sox have had with runners in scoring position had been one of the lowest in the league. That means that there's not a whole lot of base runners on it. Base runners are pressure busts pipes, right? Base runners make pitchers have to think just that one extra beat about whatever they're going to throw. It's why you hear so often when pitchers, you know, talk about their starts or whatever, they'll say, I don't know why this has become part of baseball lexicon, but I had conviction in that pitch. I was convicted with that fastball or whatever, right? Fine. Cool. I get it. That's how we talk about it now. But if you can make that pitcher think just that extra second longer and have a little bit less conviction in that pitch, then you've done your job as both a hitter and a base runner. You're that guy out there providing pressure. You're that guy out there hopefully providing one slightly easier pitch to hit because that guy's thinking about you at first or you at second or you at third, and your teammate can cash in that run, right? That's how this game tends to work from at-bat to at-bat. And with a guy like Dominic Fletcher that has the skill set he does, I'd love to see him be able to apply that kind of pressure in and out of games. He's got a tough assignment today in Nick Lodolo, another lefty, so he's going to be left on left. And you heard him talk about how his approach is going to change just a little bit, not a ton, but a little bit, against a fellow left-hander. Shrink the zone. Don't get outside that thing. And look for something to drive up the middle. I love that kind of mindset. Dominic is going to be hitting a little lower in the lineup. Oh, I just clicked off the roster here. There we go. Fletcher's hitting 8 today. So the key there is to see a lot of pitches. Make sure that you're able to flip that lineup over and get back to the top with Grossman and Vaughn and Sheets and all that good stuff. That's the assignment for Dominic Fletcher today. And we really appreciate him hopping on the show. We're going to hit the break. Dominic was able to join us a little bit earlier, so we've got to adjust our schedule some. But rest assured that White Sox general manager Chris Getz will be heard here in just a couple of minutes. He spoke to reporters yesterday and a lot of good updates on the state of this ball club, what with the injuries to Luis Robert Jr. and Yoan Moncada and Eloy Jimenez. Hopefully we see Eloy soon. And you'll hear the latest from Chris Getz in just a little bit. I'm Connor McKnight. You've got White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000. White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight. We've got the White Sox and Reds coming up later this afternoon. A 1-10 start for the Sox and Reds with Garrett Crochet on the mound for the White Sox. We've got a little bit of an irregular start to the show. We don't mind, not even a little bit. White Sox center fielder Dominic Fletcher was able to join us just a couple of minutes ago. Good talk with the youngster Fletcher. And in case you missed it or caught half of it or caught the whole thing and want to listen back, you can download the ESPN Chicago app. All of our shows are downloadable right there. You just open up the app, scroll down to White Sox Weekly, and download the episode. Save them, rate them, review them, smash the like button. Are kids still saying smash the like button? I think that's, yeah, 5-star us or whatever. Appreciate you. Don't 5-star me, like 5-star Dominic Fletcher. That's the 5-star. And you can download it and listen back to the interviews and all that good stuff. We're going to step to a quick break here in just a minute just to keep us on time, make sure that we're bringing you Chris Getz at the top of the hour. He spoke to White Sox beat reporters yesterday. But just quickly here, I can thumbnail the big issues in terms of the injuries the White Sox are dealing with. Obviously, a trio are down right now with Luis Robert Jr., Yoan Moncada, and Eloy Jimenez. Looks like Eloy could be back sooner rather than later. We'll start there. He had the adductor issue that did force him on the injured list, but he's ramping up baseball activities right now, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if we see him maybe get back tomorrow or perhaps at some point against the Royals. That's a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday series. Luis Robert Jr. sounds like could be about 6 weeks or so, which, quite frankly, is much better than some of the windows, the timetables that have been reported early on. There was a lot of interesting reporting going on at that point, but glad to hear that it's something like 6 weeks. And for Yoan Moncada, the scans, the tests, the imaging came back looking better, certainly than the injury itself looked, and Getz is hopeful, the White Sox are hopeful, that Moncada can be back at some point around the All-Star break instead of, as the longer timetable might have been, missing the rest of the season. So those are the big notes from Chris Getz's conversation with White Sox beat reporters yesterday. We'll play you some of that when we come back from a quick break. It's ESPN 1000. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. You're on ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight. The White Sox and Reds will play game two of a three-game series this afternoon. It's a 1:10 first pitch, a 12:30 pregame show, and White Sox Weekly all the way up until 12:30. White Sox general manager Chris Getz spoke with reporters yesterday, first day of a homestand, and general managers usually speak around that time. Getz had a lot to update the White Sox beat reporters on. We gave you the thumbnail of the timeline for return for three of White Sox injuries that mean a whole lot to this organization, with both all three of Eloy Jimenez, Luis Robert Jr., and Yoan Moncada on the injured list right now. Looks like in order, Jimenez, then Robert, then Moncada ought to be back at some point this season, or at least that's what they are hopeful for, what the organization is hopeful for. Those injuries, obviously a big change to what this White Sox offense looks like. It was not the only roster move that the White Sox made yesterday. Corey Abbott signed to a minor league deal, according to reports, and Chris Getz began his session with reporters yesterday. We're going to play this in two parts for you, just so that you know. It's a lengthy session, as you would expect. But part one begins with Getz kind of talking about the roster transactions they made leading up to the ball game yesterday.
We designated Brian Shaw, brought in Tyler Anderson. Tyler's been throwing really well down in Charlotte. He had a really good spring training. Brian, you know, he was with us last year, and, his greatest strength was his availability and taking the ball, and we certainly needed that and appreciated that, but we're at the point where we want to get a look at Tyler Anderson, and excited that he is here. Yoan, you know, we put on the 60-day IL, and, you know, now we have gained a little bit more information on Yoan, and you know, I think we're a little bit more optimistic on a return than initially thought, which is positive news. And, you know, in addition to Yoan, you know, Louis is another one that is trending really well, and perhaps is going to be back sooner than we initially anticipated. And then we have Eloy, who, you know, throughout this weekend, we're going to up his intensity from a running standpoint, and then hopefully we can get him out there and start playing. So that's positive news on the injury report side. And then bringing up Zach Remillard for Oscar just gives us a little bit more flexibility on the infield, a right-handed bat to help balance some things. So, we've got some new faces here. Had to, you know, go through some transactions, but, you know, look forward to the series in Cincinnati.
Can you give us the new timelines on both those guys?
Yoan, you know, our hope is sometime after the All-Star break, in all reality, and then Louis, you know, it's looking more like the kind of 6-week mark for return to play. So, that's obviously positive news, and we'll take that because those guys are impactful players for our major league club, and you know it's better when they're out there than when they're not.
Is it a little mind boggling to you that they've, you know, they work hard, but they've gone through this so many times in their career now, and it's tough for you guys, but it's tougher for them.
I mean, listen, these guys when you have injuries of that significance, you know it's. You know, it's heart-wrenching, and I know there's that period of that you're down and disappointed, but, you know, you've got to be resilient. You continue to focus, you know, each day on getting better, and those guys, you know, are determined to come and get back healthy as quickly as they can, you know, and as an organization, you know, you look at trends, and both in within the league and then, you know, White Sox trends, and you know, the beginning of the year is a higher risk time period. That everyone knows that. That's been in this industry from, you know, going to spring training to in season, and whether it be player travel and different schedules, getting higher intensity, you know, game action coming from spring training. But you know, in terms of like the full analysis, obviously we need a little bit more time. You know, you look at your off season training, you look at your spring training ramp ups. You know, you look at hydration, recovery, sleep, all those areas that go into, you know, the analysis for injuries to prevent in the future. You know, years ago, or not too long ago, we were hit hard with hamstring issues, and, you know, thankfully, knock on wood, we're not dealing with hamstring issues. And, you know, you look at around the league, too, with some of the elbow injuries, the arm issues, that thankfully we're not dealing with right now, but, you know, other teams have injury issues that need to be solved and are working on that. And you know, in the meantime, you know, we've got to show up each day and continue to work hard with the group that we have. And I know our staff and players are focused to do that.
You talked there about kind of team-wide, what the approach is going to be and trying to figure that out. Have you looked into those players specifically? Obviously, those three guys have dealt with injuries their entire career and similar ones to this, running bases, that kind of thing. Do you have any insight into kind of why those guys keep having these kind of things happen?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to take more time to kind of dive into that. Obviously, some of these guys are dealing with recurring injuries, and when you have an injury, you are at higher risk of having a similar injury in the future. You know, and you know, that's tough for players to accept and understand, and organizations as well. And it's our job to prevent something like that happening. You know, overall, you know, it's my job to build an organization that is resilient to injuries. You know, every team deals with them, and obviously we were hit with them here recently. But moving forward into the future, you know, you've got to build out an organization to be able to take on some of these injuries and build out depth. And you know, we've certainly begun to do that. Just so when you're hit with them, you can continue to fight and compete and be as good as you can be.
How do you stay away from the blame game? Because 3 years ago, when Perm retired and the organization replaced Alan Thomas, there was, you know, fingers pointed in certain directions that, you know, new technology had to be used to help the athletes here. As a newer general manager, how do you make sure that you don't fire off too fast into assuming things?
Yeah, I mean, you need to take time to analyze this properly. You do, and now, you know, whether it be injuries or any sort of struggles or an adversity that you're hit, it's important for your leadership group to stay together and be strong. And, you know, when you're analyzing trends, obviously you've got different data points that need to go into the analysis, but it takes a little bit more time than 2 weeks into the season to assess, you know, accurately so you can make sound decisions in the future.
You have to keep a level head and positivity through all this, but do you understand and sense fans' frustrations and aggravations, especially when it comes to those three players, too?
No, I understand that. I think probably most of the frustration from fans is probably our early season struggles from a win-loss standpoint. Obviously, when certain players get hurt, I know, you know, they could be disappointed because they're potentially their favorite players and they're no longer out there. So I certainly can relate to those frustrations, both personally in the position I'm in, but also for a fan of other teams as well and in other sports. So, you know, it's my job to be able to plug in, you know, different players and continue to go out there and compete. That's really all we can do at this point.
You mentioned you've got some more information on Moncada's injury that led to that. What can you share about, like, what did you guys receive that led you to feel more optimistic than you did before?
Yeah, I mean, initially, you know, you go through your usual scans and you know, with an injury like the one he's dealing with, there's the medical team is pretty broad, both inside and outside of the organization. And sometimes you go outside of the baseball realm and you look at other sports industries. You know, maybe there's a common theme in another league. And in this case, we were able to do that and, you know, came to the conclusion, or I should say the estimate time of return, you know, through those conversations, we were able to you know, estimate an earlier return than we initially thought.
So you got some other people to look at the scans.
Yes.
And then you were talking about, at least, you know, when you talk about like a 6 week return to play, is that kind of, at that point, do you feel like, and I know these are loaded questions 6 weeks ahead of time, so reading that into it, is that something where you guys feel like at that point, 6 weeks from now, he'll be able to go on a minor league rehab stay and start, or is that when you...
That's
feel
built
like,
in.
Built in.
That's
okay.
In built.
Okay.
Do you believe the initial census he was trending towards a return, maybe without an ILS, to
then the indication was kind of he had a setback. Just kind of has his progression gone from this early day.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't call it a setback. More so, just need a little bit more time for his groin to heal, and we don't want to send him out into game action without knowing that, you know, this is fully healed. So we don't have a recurrency to that injury. So we just want to make sure this is behind him when he comes back.
Would plateau be a better term?
Yes, I like plateau. That's okay. Good.
Chris, you have only 2 weeks into the season. You only have 2 wins. How do you judge what this team can do or will be able to do with all the injuries that the two need to get done?
Yeah, I mean, watching these games, just like our fans and you guys, there's been some heart-wrenching losses because they've been really close. We've got a lot of one-run games, extra-inning losses that are hard and they're difficult and they're challenging. But this group is competing. The makeup of our clubhouse is strong. And I say that when you're hit with adversity, whether it be on-field struggles and losses or injuries, it's a tight-knit group that's going to continue to work. All we can do is stay focused and continue to show up every day and put forth our best effort. It's my job to continue to motivate everyone.
What's the plan with Clevenger? When is he going to start growing in the minors? Or I know he's in Arizona now, right?
He's in Arizona right now, and then we'll get him to Charlotte, shortly to continue to build up.
Do you see him coming back relatively soon, or you said I heard you say that he was already working out?
Yeah, I see him joining in the next couple of weeks.
That's White Sox general manager Chris Getz. Part one of what we're calling a two-part Q&A with White Sox beat reporters there yesterday in the dugout. You heard Paul Sullivan of the Chicago Tribune, a fine reporter, talking about Mike Clevenger's potential timeline to join the club this year. I guess he'd be rejoining because he pitched for the White Sox last season. Semantics doesn't matter one way or the other. Eloy Jimenez is on the field right now taking live batting practice against John Brebbia. It looked like, from the White Sox beat reporter James Fegan's Twitter. Pedro Grifol spoke to reporters just a few minutes ago as we were up here listening to Chris Getz talk. Fegan writes this: Eloy Jimenez is taking live BP against John Brebbia, as I just mentioned. Watching that right now. Eloy looks good. Pedro said Jimenez reached intensities in his running yesterday that made them comfortable taking the next step, which is this live batting practice that's going on at the ballpark now, and that a rehab assignment is in sight. So that was kind of the next question I had, and one that Getz talked a little bit about here. It was a little unclear yesterday. It now seems likely Eloy could get a rehab assignment at AAA Charlotte. The White Sox have at times been able to avoid rehab assignments with minimum IL placements for position players. Sometimes you need one. Sometimes, it really just kind of depends, I guess, on the severity of the injury and how, I guess, intense you're able to be taking swings while you're injured and on the IL at the same time. So it's kind of a difficult thing to balance back and forth, but we do seem to know now that Jimenez will have a rehab assignment more than likely. So, some news here from the ballpark. 312-332-3776. Talk a little bit more about the state of the White Sox right now and kind of the state of the pitching staff, I think, is what we'll delve into here, because as Chris Getz talked a lot about the injuries to White Sox position players, and the second part of that interview, which we'll play for you, we're about 11:30 or so, will help to elucidate those matters some. We'll talk about some of the minor league success that prospects are having, especially down at AA Birmingham this morning as well. I'm Connor McKnight. You got White Sox Weekly on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. You've got White Sox Weekly here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Connor McKnight. We are kind of in the midst of listening back to White Sox general manager Chris Getz's comments made yesterday. It was a lengthy press session with reporters. A lot of updates on the injury states of a couple of different White Sox players, Eloy Jimenez, John Brebbia, Luis Robert Jr., and Yoan Moncada, of course, plus updating everybody on the state of the franchise with a tough start to the season. Obviously, the White Sox at 2-11 on the year, took one on the chin last night, 11-1 Reds over the White Sox, a 10-run margin of victory for the Reds, which now puts the White Sox plus-minus run differential at negative 39 for the season. The Reds were actually at a break-even zero. It's funny, this Reds team has a lot of impact bats up and down the lineup. Guys like Ellie De La Cruz and Spencer Steer, who's off to a blisteringly hot start. And Tyler Stevenson hit a homer last night. Guys like Jake Fraley and Christian Encarnacion Strand probably have a lot more in them than even they've displayed so far this year. And all of that without Matt McClain, one of their better infielders, a guy who was pushed off of shortstop by Ellie De La Cruz to go play second base, and a consistent 300, 360, 480, 490, 500 kind of guy with a slugging percentage last year, and with a great future. He's done for the season. I believe it's a knee injury for Matt McClain. So this Reds lineup has got a lot in it and a good young farm system, too. The pitching for Cincinnati has been really rough to start the season. They got a great one out of Andrew Abbott last night, and we'll get Nick Lodolo back today, a left-hander, to make his start against the White Sox. Mentioned to you earlier, the live batting practice session for Eloy Jimenez against John Brebbia has come to an end. They're taking down the tarps and the cage. Well, not the cage. They're going to leave that up so the Reds can hit if they want to. That happened on the field under the watchful eyes of many here at Guaranteed Rate Field. Reds getting ready down the right field line to take infield practice and get their day started. We got a 1-10 start here coming up. Now, I think what's going to be interesting to watch here, and probably difficult for the White Sox to manage, I mean, shoot, it would be difficult for any team to lose three of their projected top hitters and then tread water over the next couple of weeks, but that is the task laid out for the White Sox early on in this season with Eloy, Robert, and Moncada all out. I have been impressed by Lenin Sosa a little bit. His at-bats over the last few days, filling in for Yoan Moncada at third base, have been productive. Been caught swinging at a lot of stuff outside the strike zone. I mean, like, not just everywhere around the strike zone, but just off the plate. He's been chasing some, whether it be fastballs or changeups, high and off the plate. So that's a particular area that perhaps Sosa could rein in a little bit. We saw him flash power last season. Folks kind of forget the power run he went on for about 8 to 12 games last year. I think he had 6 home runs in a stretch of about a dozen or maybe 15 games. There's pop in that bat. And when he came up, there was some hope that Sosa could be, a guy that kind of comes through the system and provides you a little bit more than just a bench sort of profile, but maybe not exactly a first division starter, that kind of thing. What is available now for the White Sox and for these players specifically on the infield is a lot of playing time, a lot of chances to prove that they're the guy to take that spot. Now, we'd thought in the offseason the White Sox had secured a shortstop and a second baseman that were ready to go. Paul DeJong and Nicky Lopez. And sure, that could still be the case. But with the injury to Yoan Moncada and some underperformance that we've seen to start the year, it looks like Pedro Grifol is more than willing to mix and match at third, at short, and at second base. And with Eloy Jimenez currently on the injured list as well, that DH spot, that availability, has opened up some playing time for Gavin Sheets, a guy we've seen here for a couple of years now, and a guy we've seen go on heaters here for a couple of years, and he's swinging the hot bat right now. Over his last 7 games, Gavin Sheets has been putting up numbers, hitting .391 with a .500 on-base percentage and slugging .826. What I've noticed from Sheets, and his last 2 home runs have shown us this, he's able and seeing the ball well enough to open up on a pitch inside and drive the baseball. That's been something for Gavin that specifically last season was lacking a little bit. Still took some pretty good bats, but was kind of going the other way and ground balls and that kind of thing. And he talked pretty openly, and I credit him for this, about not being able to get regular at-bats and how difficult that is to stay in a rhythm. It is the, it's the juxtaposition. It's the good side and bad side to the coin of being in the big leagues, but not being an everyday player, right? We hear a lot of this from a lot of different guys all throughout the league. Yes, I'm in the bigs, and it's great, but also I'm not a starter, so keeping that rhythm and that eye for the baseball and that timing at the plate is all so very difficult when you're not facing live pitchers that want to destroy you on a regular basis, right? I mean, it's just that's the difference between being a guy that can provide off the bench versus a guy who can't and might need to be somewhere else getting regular playing time in order to provide something for the team. It is an incredibly difficult thing to figure out. It is something that comes and goes at times. And we talk about starters having, you know, streaks, right? Going through, you know, a week or so where they look like they won't hit anything. They couldn't hit a watermelon with a snow shovel. And then you get hot again. You get that timing. You figure out what it's going to look like and how you need to get that barrel to the baseball. And it looks like you can't record an out. You know, it's just that's how that goes. It can go that way for bench players, too. It just feels different, I think, looking from the outside in because that playing time is so different and sparse in a lot of occasions. Well, Gavin's getting the playing time right now, and the timing seems to be there, and he's back in the lineup today as the designated hitter. We'll see if those opportunities for guys like Lenin Sosa and others are able to turn into production as well. Wouldn't be surprised one bit if just an exposure to this level of competition at least allows them to find a rhythm somewhat, and then they'll have to make an adjustment back to what the league is going to do to them once they get hot. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. There's more from White Sox general manager Chris Getz, and we will get to it after a quick break. You've got ESPN 1000. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight. White Sox and Reds this afternoon at the ballpark. I know I've mentioned it a couple of times already, but the day just keeps getting more and more beautiful for baseball. We're about an hour away from the pregame show and an hour and a half away from first pitch. It's a 1:10 start. I guess that's an hour and 40 minutes. Either way, plenty of time for you to get yourself down here to 35th and Shields. Gorgeous day for a baseball game. Hopefully the White Sox can bounce back from last night's defeat and even up this series, position themselves for a series win, their first series win of the year on Sunday afternoon. They got the right guy going today in Garrett Crochet. And I believe general manager Chris Getz spoke a little bit about Crochet in this segment of his interview with White Sox beat reporters yesterday. Certainly a lot more on the state of the ball club. And it's just from yesterday afternoon, so some really pertinent stuff to the White Sox at this point in the season. So back to it we go. Here is the final part, part number two of White Sox general manager Chris Getz media availability yesterday.
As far as the Kopech plan, is it up to your manager, your pitching coach, your staff, or is it a collective between you all the way down with them as far as how to use them, how to bring them along, what eventually he will be?
Well, I think he's shown, you know, fairly quickly that he's very comfortable in the bullpen and has leverage ability. You know, what he showed the other night in Cleveland was outstanding. You know, it was really fun to watch, just seeing him grow, you know, in the bullpen role. But I leave it to Pedro and our staff how they want to deploy, you know, our pitchers. Obviously, there's a fair amount of prep that goes into, you know, leveraging certain situations. He's a guy that's shown that he's valuable in any role in the bullpen at this point. So, you know, it's exciting to watch and look forward to, you know, getting Michael back out there in a really important situation.
I guess my question is, would you rather have him 3 to 4 times a week for an inning or twice a week for up and down? You know, that would that be come into play when you guys have your get-togethers and talk about his progress?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to get to the point where we can use him in most leverage situations, games to perhaps get us a win at the end of the game. But sometimes there's situations where coming in earlier is a more important time to use Michael in terms of the frequency. Obviously, he's still fairly new into, you know, transitioning to the bullpen coming from spring training. So you want to be wise and how often you're using someone, and a lot of that feedback is just gained by Michael and how his body's recovering.
Garrett has obviously had a lot of success in a handful of starts so far. What's your guys' approach in terms of a guy who hasn't had a lot of innings prior to this season? Is the idea to let him go every fifth day for the rest of the year, or do you guys have a decision to make down the road? What's the approach?
Yeah, I mean, at least in the interim, you know, we're going to let this guy go. I mean, it's been outstanding so far with Garrett. Every time he takes the mound, I think everyone feels like we're in a good position to win, and I'm always interested how he's going to navigate lineups, and he's been able to navigate every lineup that's been, going against him. You know, at some point, you know, I would imagine that we're going to have to be a little bit more measured, but we're not at that point right now. I think we appreciate, you know, the heck out of what Garrett's providing to this team right now.
Like you said in Cleveland that, you know, the quality of bats just haven't been there in the way you want, especially without, you know, three main guys right now in that type of firepower. How does this offense have to operate to thrive or run together?
Yeah, I mean, fundamentally, it really doesn't change in regards to giving consistent at-bats and understanding situations that are in front of you. You know, Pedro did a good job, you know, the last couple of nights in terms of, you know, double steals and tacking on some runs here and there and getting runners over from second with no outs. You've got to be creative at times, and I think that there is a level of creativity with this group, but it really starts with just the quality of the at-bats, 1 through 9. You look at Grossman and what he's provided at the top of the lineup, the amount of pitches he has seen, the ability to get on base. He was able to get some hits as well. There's some comfort with him and what he's providing right now, and you hope that bleeds into the rest of the lineup. Andrew Vaughn had some really good at-bats Wednesday in Cleveland, so we hope that's trending in the right direction. Gavin Sheets has had some he's really stepped up in crucial moments, hitting doubles and hitting for power to help tack on runs. So it's in there. It's just a matter of having it 1 through 9 on a regular basis and putting us in a good position to finish off games.
What's the future you see for Oscar here? I know he was only planned to be up a short time this time, but do you see a future for Oscar here?
I do. Oscar, you know, he took the assignment well when we sent him down, in spring training. His at-bats were solid in spring training. He was much more patient, much more under control and intelligent on the field, which was obviously nice to see. He's continued to do that, down in Charlotte, and we've tasked him to stay on that track, and at some point there'll be, you know, an extended opportunity for him.
When do you see Max Stassi coming back off that rehab assignment?
You know, he just took a swing off his hand. That's something that now he needs to recover from. It's not significant in regards to a fracture, but it slowed it down a little bit. We want to get him to the point where, you know, he can catch back-to-back games, his body's recovering, and before we bring him back.
We know that Paul DeJong was raised in a great organization, has great skills, been a great pro. But he said, you can't make that first out with nobody out. At home plate, we've always been told you can't make that first out at third base. So where can you make that first out? I guess that's the question, you know, because it just seems like, and it's not fair to pile on him for that situation, but it kind of stood out, and I'd never heard you can't make that first out at home plate. So,
well, I very much a loaded question there, and you rarely want to make outs ever. I'll give you that, but that was a situation where, you know, they've got a very talented middle infield in Cleveland, and it was a sharp hit ball to the left, and obviously he took it to second base and turned that double play, and you know, I know that as a base runner with no outs, regardless of what base you're at, you've got to be mindful of getting doubled off. So you don't want to get too far from the bag. But what comes with that is, you know, you're not further down the line as you would like, because you need to protect yourself from getting doubled off. It just so happened it was a sharp ground ball that took him to second base, and Paul looks up, and all of a sudden he wasn't able to run home there. Unique situation. He's a very smart player. He's not gifted as an 80 runner, but he's a steady base runner, and that was a fairly unique situation that we're learning from.
Chris, when Jerry introduced you last fall, he talked about wanting to win as quickly as possible, and you constructed the roster you think that would get you there. Can you give us any insight as to how he's feeling, reacting so far here, what those lines of communication have been like?
Well, I mean, we certainly prioritize certain areas to improve on this team. And on the defensive side, on the pitching side, and feel pretty good about that so far. Obviously, has it really shown well in our win-loss record at this point. But this is, you know, it's really about staying the course. This isn't something that was going to be turned around overnight. You know, we're determined as a front office and a leadership group to continue to go out there and find talent on the amateur side, continue to develop players, you know, to put them in the pipeline to eventually help our major league club. And, you know, we're tasking our major league staff to maximize the talent that we have. I mean, that's what we're focused on right now. And, you know, we have support to do that, because it is the right plan.
Brad Keller pitched a try last night. You have Nastrini out down there. Do you see an immediate solution for fifth starter down there, or are you kind of piecing it together turn through turn still?
Keller threw last night. He threw well. You know, we've got a couple options. We're not there quite yet to, you know, pencil in our fifth starter, but we're nearing that point, and we've thankfully got a couple of quality options.
What's the report you're getting in Colson down there in Charlotte?
Colson's doing really well. You know, defensively, he's been making some really good plays. That's been a high priority for the organization for Colson. His at-bats have been pretty solid. You know, he's showing up every day, and he's you know, really becoming the overall professional we had hoped, and you know, look forward to watching his progress unfold there in Charlotte. But he's doing well.
I know you've all said that a player like that will let you know when he's ready. But is there a benefit too to, he hasn't played in Charlotte until this year, that high, right? So just let him go for a while there and see what he can do.
Yeah, I mean, it was really, regardless of where he was starting it. You know, from an assignment standpoint, it's more, you know, he's starting the season healthy and, you know, getting a complete season in, which he hasn't done yet. And it just so happened to be at Charlotte, and he's off and running, playing on a regular basis. And, you know, I still believe that he'll let us know when he's ready, and we won't be scared to bring him up when he is ready.
Is there like a purpose to put him down there with Churchley, with, you know, your assistant infield coordinator being one of your top? Was that kind of intentional defensive reps with him kind of something you're
being that down? Not necessarily. I mean, Jersch does an outstanding job. You know, he's certainly one of our best on the player development front, and you know, to have him being around Colson on a regular basis is definitely a benefit of the organization. You know, but I could say the same thing about any of the affiliates and the staffs that we have for our players down there. But yeah, Colson, you know, is deserving to be at Charlotte after what he did at AA in the Arizona Fall League, and you know, he's shown that's the right decision so far.
So, what type of GM are you when it comes to frustration watching the game? Do you throw stuff? Do you, how does the anxiety and the, you know, agony impact you? How do you deal with it?
Well, there's certain aspects of the game that you focus on more than others. I know what we prioritize in the off season and continue to prioritize during the season, and you got to make sure that you maintain that focus, and you know, we're carrying out what we were set out to do. You know, like most people, you know, you'd like to win ball games, so it's disappointing when we don't get wins. But from a big picture standpoint, I want to feel like we're on the right track, and that gives me plenty of confidence and calms me through kind of the ups and downs that can be given to you in a baseball season.
You do throw things.
Yeah. Yes, that was a long-winded way of saying, yeah, I throw the Bobby Knight chair once in a while.
Hey, Chris,
expect Moncada? Is there a new timeline
with him? Yeah, I think it's we expect right around the All-Star break, just after the All-Star break at this point.
That's White Sox general manager Chris Getz. Two good ones there at the end, one from Bruce of The Score and one from, I think it was Chuck on NBC. Most important, Yoan Moncada sometime after the All-Star break. But also very important, Chris Getz throw things. That's good. I appreciate, I get it. Listen, I've been in that situation, mostly video games. But I've been known to throw a controller time or two, and I would imagine that as a White Sox general manager, as a general manager in baseball at all, you don't have a controller, so I would think you probably whip some stuff at the wall if something doesn't go your way, especially being a former player, right? Or I don't know, maybe it is different. Maybe as a former player, you know what it is to have been there, to have failed, to got it done, and understand that difference. But I would think, given the little bit I've read and talked with, you know, general managers who have been former players, that kind of inability to impact anything on the field can kind of get to you just a little bit more than a, you know, it would never happen. But if a guy like me were in the front office, God have mercy on your franchise if I were running it. But if I were there, I would bet that agony is a little bit different than somebody who had played and understands what it is to actually be good at a game as opposed to not. So I'm glad to know that Chris Getz does throw things, and sometimes that happens every now and again. Fair, totally fair. There are much more germane things to the White Sox franchise that we'll get to when we come back. This is White Sox Weekly, and we'll get to it all on the other side of a quick break, ESPN 1000. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Join us at the ballpark tomorrow for Family Sundays, presented by Coke Zero Sugar. Tickets starting at only $10. Enjoy Kids Run the Bases post-game. Oh, yes, that's right. That's tomorrow. Character artists and more. To learn more and purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/Sunday. I don't think I've gotten to talk about this yet this year. This is our first home Sunday where the weather's been good enough for having it. It is a gorgeous day out here at the ballpark, and Sunday tomorrow looks like it could be an even nicer day. And I know I've mentioned this a couple of times here on White Sox Weekly, but I'm saying it because I mean it. One of my favorite things about this job is that Sundays after a day game, during the post-game show, Family Sundays means that kids get to run the bases here at Guaranteed Rate Field. So that means that I get to do the post-game show while I watch the kids run the bases here at Guaranteed Rate Field. And if you need an injection of joy into your life, if you need a shot of it, kids running the bases is fantastic. They lose their minds. It's absolutely fantastic. There'll be every now and again, when Liam Hendricks was here too, it happened a lot. The White Sox players would run out there and kind of run with some kids, you know, just from third to home or something like that. They'd trot along with some of them. It's great. It's heartwarming. It's fantastic. A part of me can't wait for my daughter to be old enough to trot around the bases. And also part of me wants her to stay as young as she is forever. But it's a real push and pull because of how much fun it is to watch the kids run the bases here at the ballpark. But anyway, Saturday, April 27th as well, we got more fun for you as the White Sox take on the Tampa Bay Rays at 6:10 p.m. The first 20,000 fans in attendance will receive a White Sox hockey jersey presented by CIBC. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. You know, one of the things that White Sox general manager Chris Getz was talking about there toward the end of his media availability yesterday was some of the kids on the farm that the White Sox have either, you know, drafted here recently, like Colson Montgomery, signed internationally like Brian Ramos, or acquired in trade, a guy like Drew Thorpe, Jairo Iriarte, or Samuel Zavala, who is in a different class altogether, but he was the outfielder the White Sox got back from the Padres in the deal that got Dylan Cease out to San Diego. And, you know, I think it's worth noting that through two starts, Drew Thorpe, who was kind of the headliner in that deal, he's down at AA Birmingham with a lot of the Sox top prospects that are seeing a lot of production. Just last night, Drew Thorpe made his second start. He went 5, struck out 7, allowed 1 run, and I think walked 1. 4 hits allowed for Drew Thorpe. I think I said he threw 5 innings, he threw 6. In his first start, really similar performance, 8 strikeouts in 5 innings, no walks, no runs in that one. So Thorpe has been as advertised, right? And I think, you know, part of what, well, I guess let me back up. When the Padres, before they had dealt for Dylan Cease and picked him up from the White Sox, there were rumblings in Padres camp about Drew Thorpe perhaps starting the season with the Major League club. And instead, with the White Sox, he's now at AA. Two parts to that. And I know we talked a little bit about this some, I think, on post-game shows. But one being, Birmingham is much different than Charlotte. It's Birmingham's a place where you can get, I think, some representative results when you're talking about pitching. When you go to Charlotte, you are playing in a bandbox, an absolute launching pad, a place where the rules of gravity don't seem to exist for batted baseballs. So it can be very hard to get a representative sample on the pitchers that are working at Charlotte, especially when you've got a guy coming into the organization, you want him to get used to the coaching points, you want probably some, you know, better looks, some better results, some, I mean, all of the technical stuff, to say nothing of the confidence that you'd like this young man to have now entering a new organization. Thorpe was kind of that, you know, tweener, definitely seemingly ready for AAA, probably reasonable to throw him in AA as well. I mean, obviously the Padres, who are well known for, I wouldn't say rushing their prospects, but definitely being aggressive with them and promotion levels, they were happy to have him, or at least, I guess, willing to have a conversation about Thorpe being in the bigs this year. For the White Sox, the results have been spectacular through two starts. What Thorpe provides, and when you talk to a lot of scouts about him and you read the write-ups, what Thorpe very clearly provides is a very high floor for a starting pitcher. Now, I get that that doesn't sound exciting, right? That that's not somebody with 102 miles an hour and an exploding slider and stuff like that. But on the other side of that 102 miles an hour and exploding slider or whatever are A, injury concerns. And I know all pitchers have injury concerns. All pitchers have injury concerns. However, it seems more and more, and there's more and more writing been done on this over the last couple of weeks, especially with guys like Spencer Strider now done for the year and all of the UCLs that are seemingly just exploding in all places. It does seem like velocity is a contributing factor, that spin is a contributing factor. So call me old-fashioned, you're old-fashioned, but I like the idea of having a guy in a big league rotation, not everybody in your rotation, but a guy in your big league rotation that you can rely on for a lot of innings, hopefully, and a good mix of fastball velocity changing and fastball change combos. I think that, having that difference in a starting five, that guy like Thorpe in your starting five that's going to look a lot different, that's going to get it done a lot differently, can help in many different ways. I think that's valuable, and I think that's something the White Sox may well have in Drew Thorpe, who's off to a great start at AA Birmingham. I also wouldn't be surprised at all if he's got AAA action at some point, maybe after the first half of the minor league season. Remember, too, or at least, I don't know, maybe you don't follow the minor leagues the same way others do, or maybe you haven't been interested in the minor leagues ever. I wouldn't fault you for that either. But when it comes to minor league playoff appearances, the season is split into two halves. And for the vast majority of leagues, and I think it's changed some since some of the restructuring of the minors a few years ago. But when I was interning out in Carolina in the Carolina League years ago, it feels like a long time, longer ago than I care to admit, I was introduced to this for the first time. There's a first half winner and a second half winner. You win the first half, you are guaranteed a playoff spot. And while that may not sound like it's, you know, super meaningful when we're talking about results here at the big league level, right, here at Guaranteed Rate Field and how the White Sox are going to fare against the Reds this afternoon, for a lot of franchises, they really value the idea of being able to put some of those prospects into the playoffs and have them feel that adrenaline, have them feel that do or die, that kind of life in a clubhouse, that kind of, you know, waking up for the next day and knowing that tomorrow might be your last and all that kind of stuff. I mean, there's some value to that. And you'll often see a team, let's call it a double A, let's call it the Birmingham Barons, right, who win the first half, guarantee themselves a playoff spot, graduate some of, if not all of the prospects up to AAA or maybe even up to the bigs or what have you. And then as that second half comes to an end and the playoffs begin, you may see a couple of guys go back down from AAA to AA to get that playoff experience, to have that run, to win a series or whatever. Not uncommon at all. You would also see, I think, in some situations, the franchise that I was interning for at the time was the Atlanta Braves, and that was Jason Hayward as a 19-year-old in the minor leagues, and Craig Kimbrell was in that system as well. And if I recall correctly, I was working at High A at the time. The Low A team sent Kimbrell and Hayward up to the High A team to get them some run, because they had been performing so well as 19-year-olds. They wanted them to taste those playoffs, and indeed they did. The Pelicans were bounced out in the first round that year, but they got that experience. We could see something similar happen for the Birmingham Barons this year. Also, in Birmingham last night, they beat the Trash Pandas 6-2. Minor league baseball team names are fantastic, and the Trash Pandas have one of the better ones out there. I have a lot of love for the Birmingham Barons, but Rocket City Trash Pandas is great. Anyway, Edgar Carroll went deep twice last night, 2-for-3, 5 RBI. He's the catcher, the top catching prospect in the White Sox system, having been acquired from the Los Angeles Angels last year, the deal that sent Lucas Giolito and Reynaldo Lopez out west. So just a little minor league update for you, as Chris Getz was talking about it some. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about Colson Montgomery, what he is, what he isn't at this point, and kind of what the White Sox may or may not have for him at some point later on this season. I think we'll get to that when we come back here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. We are getting closer and closer to the start of the pregame show. 12:30, we'll begin our pregame show entertainment. 1:10 first pitch for the White Sox and Reds here at Guaranteed Rate Field. Len and DJ are ready in the booth down the way. And we've got a ball game this afternoon at a gorgeous, gorgeous afternoon at Guaranteed Rate Field. Sox fans, now through April 18th, lock in your summer outing with our Sweet Flash Sale. Receive up to 40% off a 20-person suite on select games, and enjoy a game day tailored to you with customizable food and beverage options. For more information and to purchase your suite, visit whitesox.com/flashsale. That's whitesox.com/flashsales. And if you're looking, if you're thinking, well, Connor, that sounds great, I'd love to get out to a suite. I'll sign myself up for one of those a little bit later on, but I've got a free Tuesday coming up here. I have news. Join us for $5 Tuesdays. All fans will enjoy a specially priced $5 concessions menu, including draft beers from Miller Lite or Modelo, Garrett Popcorn Stadium Buttery, Vienna Beef Hot Dogs or Polish Sausages, Beggar's Pizza Slices, Nachos, and select Coca-Cola products. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/Tuesdays. Whew, boy, that's just a lot of stuff going on here at the ballpark. We got a good start today, too, with Nick Lodolo making his first MLB start of the 2024 season. Only 7 starts last year for Nick Lodolo. I thought he'd gotten more than that when I showed up to the ballpark today, but I was abused of those notions. 7 starts, 34 1/3 innings. He had a leg injury, a couple of them actually, and some setbacks, too, that caused him to miss a whole bunch of last season. But thought of as a pretty good prospect in this game at a good rookie season in 22. Garrett Crochet starts for the White Sox, and, well, you know about Garrett Crochet. Shoot, we spent about a half an hour talking about him. He has been so good to start the season. I wanted to talk a little bit about Colson Montgomery here, because with the injuries the White Sox have suffered to both to infielder Yoan Moncada and to Eloy Jimenez, the DH, and to Luis Robert Jr., there's some opportunity abounding for the White Sox. And I think given the fact that Montgomery had so much helium around him and such a great year at AA Birmingham last season, and being, you know, a top 10 prospect ranked by just about everybody, largely you'll see him in the top 10, definitely in the top 15 with an outlier or two that's got him down around the 30s or 40s. I want to say Nick Longenhagen, who I like quite a bit as a scout for Fangraphs, has him quite a bit lower than other places. And for the most part, that's the question that Longenhagen has about Colson Montgomery's ability to stay at shortstop. That's, for the most part, those are his concerns. Now, I get in one of the first phone calls we took after the second series of the year, I think it was against the Royals, Sox were on the road, they lost all four, the whole thing, was about bringing up Colson Montgomery and letting him get his run. Shoot, he's the White Sox top prospect. He plays middle infield. He's got home run swing. He's 22 years old. He's already AAA. I mean, these were the points that the caller at the time was making in support of Colson Montgomery. And to that, I kind of thought a couple of different things, and Chris Getz addressed it a little bit yesterday. Montgomery got off to a slow start at AAA Charlotte. Right now, just brought up his stat line, and I'll read it for you. And again, don't scout the minor league stat line. That's not how you should evaluate whether or not a guy's having a great season. I mean, sure, if it's if he's like OPSing 2200 or something like that, like Jackson Holliday was when he got called up to the bigs, yeah, he's probably playing well. But anyway, Montgomery right now hitting 260 with a 327 on base and a 687 OPS, that's on base plus slugging. He homered for the first time last night. He was 2-for-4 in a Charlotte Knights loss, 7-5 the final against the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp. I think they're the Jumbo Shrimp. Yeah, they're the Jumbo Shrimp. And the Charlotte Knights fell in that ballgame. But with Montgomery, I think the key, and you hear a lot of organizations talk about this when it comes to their top prospects, and some of it just isn't true, and sometimes it's actually real. We hear often that a player just needs a few more weeks in the minor to work on his defense. And then he gets brought up, and then we talk about service time, and then we talk about the state of the game when it comes to young players and whether or not we're being aggressive enough with our top prospects and all this other stuff. It's not one franchise. It's just about every single one of them. And the incentives that have been put in place to bring those rookies up and get them playing time and votes for rookies of the year, and then the compensatory draft picks that come after your young players either win rookie of the year or get those votes or finish in a certain percentile in terms of games played and overall wins above replacement, all that kind of stuff. All those things are good. And I think it really has helped teams be less afraid of that service time that young players get. But with Colson Montgomery, I think it makes a lot of sense to let him, we hear this a lot, right, marinate at AAA for a while. Not just because the slow start with the bat or his relative youth to the level, right? He just turned 22 in February of last season, February of this winter, rather, last winter. And it is, there's time on this clock, right? I mean, he was 19 when he graduated high school, so an older level high school bat. We actually had Jim Callis on the show in the offseason talking about how sometimes you'll hear that an older high school player gets over-scouted because he's maxed out and tooled out and all that stuff, and he's just dominating younger competition. And Callis pointed out very quickly, this just wasn't the case with Colson Montgomery. That's very much not what that was. And that's what made the White Sox so convinced he was worthy of the high pick they gave him and what has led to his being one of the top prospects in baseball. Still, I think letting him find a defensive home makes as much sense as anything else, especially given the shape that this White Sox season has kind of gotten off to a start with. There's very little reason for Colson Montgomery to do anything other than play short until he tells you he can't or doesn't want to, right? And I mean that with his play, right? I mean, if the errors are there, if the range isn't there, if that 6'3 frame doesn't hold up at short, or for whatever reason that you might have to move him off of shortstop, then you let that game tell you it needs to happen. Third base is just about 60 feet over to his right, you know? I mean, it's not that far away. That kind of player, that kind of size, has been, especially over the last 10, 15 years or so, been more and more populated by players that have that height. I mean, I remember, and I'll just use the comparison because he was in town and a player that I covered before taking this job a while ago, Chris Bryant at 6'4". There were a lot of questions about whether or not a guy his size would play third base and be able to hold up and be defensively sound. You know, Bryant's career has obviously taken a turn since signing with the Colorado Rockies, but defensively, it really wasn't an issue for him. Health-wise, I don't know that it was defense over there that set him back some. I think some foul balls off feet affected Bryant as much as anything else, and a swing had kind of, I believe, if I it led to a shoulder issue or something like that, but it hadn't been the defense that did it. And we see more and more. I mean, look at the other side of the dugout, or look at the other dugout on the other side of the field right now. You've got Ellie De La Cruz at 6'5", listed at 6'5". I'm convinced he's 6'7", playing shortstop. O'Neill Cruz with the Pirates, giant. He's playing shortstop. And Colson Montgomery has often been compared to a guy like, you know, Corey Seager, who's about that size, plays you a decent shortstop, hits the daylights out of the baseball, and is, you know, handling himself and winning World Series MVPs, right? I mean, this is, it's not something that's so foreign to us as baseball fans now, right? The overall look of that position has changed quite a bit, and Colson Montgomery, at least at this point, fits it. So I kind of get, well, here's what I would expect happens. The White Sox have, the White Sox have an option to let Montgomery or Brian Ramos or anybody else come up, play about 45 days or less, still have their rookie eligibility intact for 2025, and then, with that rookie eligibility intact, get all the playing time they can handle at the MLB level, win Rookie of the Year, right? I mean, that's what you want, right? You want that kind of performance. You can put that kind of expectation on a top-ranked prospect. Win a Rookie of the Year. Bring the White Sox some draft compensation to help out Montgomery in his many years to come on the South Side, and hopefully, you know, AL Central championships and World Series abound, right? I mean, that's the overall arching plan. And I think that kind of development at AAA Charlotte, that kind of search and emphasis on finding a defensive home makes as much sense as anything else for the player. He's got a great coaching system, let's call it, with Justin Gerschle, that James, you could hear James Fegan of Sox Machine ask Chris Getz about during his media availability that we played for you a couple of minutes ago. He's in good hands. He's also, and I, as much as we talked about when we were talking about Drew Thorpe in the minor leagues being at Birmingham and how difficult it can be for pitchers, how difficult it is for pitchers to pitch at Charlotte, I've often wondered, and maybe we'll talk to some people about this and get you some answers on next week's White Sox Weekly, but it can't be a terrible thing to also be a hitter at AAA Charlotte who, let's say you're struggling a little bit, you hit the ball on the ground too much, you just kind of get into a funk or something. It can't hurt to get one in the air and get a cheapy homer or something like that. You know, a wind-aided, elevation-aided, sea-level-aided home run or something like that. Just see one go out. Even if it isn't like, well, that one's not leaving any other ballpark, but it went out of here and it made me feel a little bit better. And I drove in those runs and helped my team win that game. And I did put a decent swing on it, even if it wasn't my best. You know what I'm saying? Like you kind of get those layups at a certain degree at Charlotte. And I wouldn't be surprised if that helps a guy or two get out of a funk here or there. Listen, is it training wheels? No, not necessarily, because pitchers are still trying to get you out. But it's certainly a factor that I think could help just a little bit. I mean, on the list of reasons he's there, right, or any player is there, it's like 95th. But it's always something that's kind of, you know, been bubbling in the back of my mind that maybe we'll track down here with a couple of coaches. Maybe we'll have some minor leaguers on to talk about it some too, because it has to exist at one level or another. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. Still some time for you here on White Sox Weekly. We'll get back into the start that Garrett Crochet has had to his season. We'll talk about the big leaguers here when we come back. We're very close to first pitch. 1:10 start for the White Sox and Reds. So stay here. We got baseball coming your way on ESPN 1000. J. Just about ready for baseball here at Guaranteed Rate Field. White Sox and Reds with a 1-10 start this afternoon. I'm Connor McKnight, and you're listening to White Sox Weekly. Pre-game show coming up at 12:30, so don't go anywhere. Concourse starting to fill up there out in the outfield. It is a beautiful day for baseball, and I'm glad so many White Sox fans are ready to take advantage of the afternoon. We got another one tomorrow, another day game, a 1-10 start. That'll be the finale of this series against the Reds. Sox fans, bring your pup out to the ballpark on Monday, April 29th for Dog Day, sponsored by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Grab a seat in the outfield. Watch the Sox take on the Twins at 6:40 p.m. Limited availability. And to purchase your special tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. We actually, since the Twins just got mentioned there in the read, saw the news that Carlos Correa has been placed on the 10-day IL. He got off to a great start to the season, unlike his other starts as a member of the Twins. So that means that Minnesota now has Royce Lewis and Carlos Correa on the injured list. It's an oblique strain for Correa, who'd been playing through it for a little while. I guess he was a little congested and tight in that kind of rib cage area anyway. Like, wasn't feeling good and was congested and wasn't sure whether or not it was the injury or whatnot. And things got to a point where he couldn't really move around much. So he's on the IL, and the Twins, a lot like the White Sox, are having some serious offensive issues to start their season. With the Guardians getting off to the great start that they have, what had looked like a division that the Twins could maybe not run away with, but certainly command this season, is now in the Guardians or maybe the Royals' hands, at least early going. Who knows? It's 12, 13, 14 games in, something like that. So we got a lot of time before anything shakes out one way or the other. I should also let you know that you can enter the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to win the best seats in the house. April's winner will get 2 Wintrust Scout Seat tickets to 3 home games against the Red Sox, Rangers, and Mets. Enjoy the views directly behind home plate, complimentary food and beverage, in-seat service, and VIP parking. To enter, visit whitesox.com/sweepstakes. Today's ballgame will be started by Garrett Crochet of the White Sox, and I am really interested to see how this is going to go. From two different aspects, really. One being this: his last start, he went 5 innings, gave up a 2-run home run to Hunter Renfro against the Royals. He was good. He was good, no doubt about it. I mean, very good. The homer he gave up was on a slider low and across the strike zone to Renfro. And Crochet said that after that start, he had his worst fastball command of the season. And to that, I say, boy, that bad fastball command, good for you, because it was still pretty decent. He ended up striking 5. He did not walk a batter, but did fall behind some. It certainly wasn't the same kind of, command and control that he'd shown in his first start against the Tigers or second start against the Braves, where he struck out 8 in each of those starts. He also went just 5 innings, and the total pitches for Crochet his last time out was at 77. Pedro Grifol spoke to reporters, after that game, and I think has also talked since, about pulling back on Crochet in that particular start, because while, it looked like the stuff was still decent, he's still competing, it was a tight ball game, the whole thing, the White Sox lost that 1-5-3, there was really no need to push him in that game. 87 pitches in game number 1, 93 in game number 2, and 77 in game number 3. So obviously, game results and how this thing goes is going to dictate how long Pedro sticks with Garrett and exactly what kind of challenges he's willing to push him back out there to face. But is this going to be an afternoon where the White Sox are ready to say, yeah, go get him, you're in this ball game until 85, 90, 95 pitches, and then we'll come get you? Is this a game where, regardless maybe of score, 5 innings ought to do it? We'll bring you out. If it is a 1-0, 2-0, 2-1 game, a really close one after 5, and Garrett feels, things look good for him, but that pitch counts like it was the game against the Royals, 70-ish, 75-ish, 80-ish, then is that a day, is this a day where the White Sox say, all right, let's pull it back a little bit, let's end this for Garrett, good results, positive day, turn it over to the bullpen? this is a day where the White Sox bullpen should be ready to go, kind of all hands on deck. Yesterday we saw a couple of guys pitch. Wouldn't be too surprised to see any one of them get a back-to-back day. You had the off day on Thursday. Michael Kopech and Jordan Leisure both threw multiple innings their last time out, but they've hit the reset button, should be good to go. So you've got a full complement of bullpen arms, or at least a very close to full complement of bullpen arms, ready to support Crochet if the White Sox can get him a lead and the right arms, you know, the up or ahead or the even or ahead arms to bring it home. This whole season, or at least as much of it as Garrett Crochet can be in the starting rotation for, is so intriguing because it lacks precedence. There just aren't a lot of pitchers that you can point to that had the major league resume, or frankly, lack thereof, that Garrett Crochet did, but also the prospect pedigree that Crochet did at the same time. A first-round pick, a guy who didn't play in the minors, pandemic season aside, had such incredible success out of the bullpen. I mean, blow you away kind of stuff. And now, as a starter, seems to be even better than he was the last time we saw him healthy as a reliever. It's incredible. But today will be another one of those tests where we kind of see how the White Sox both allow him to compete and maybe pull back on the reins some to make sure that he's got more for next time around. To say nothing of pitching on a four-day or a five-day schedule, too. So Crochet's got an extra little bit of rest there coming into this start against the Reds. Really interested to see. We'll talk more about it in the pregame show coming up here in just a few minutes. A gigantic thank you to Jack McGrath and Brendan Riley for their help on White Sox Weekly today. Don't go anywhere. Pregame show's next on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.